This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello and welcome, everyone, to Washington Watch. Well, as the city digs out from a record snowstorm, one GOP presidential candidate was hit with an avalanche of criticism by conservative leaders on Friday. Rich Lowry, editor of National Review, joins me with the chilly details in just a moment. Also, Eric Erickson is challenging the theological holdings of pastors who are falling in line behind Donald Trump. Eric is here to explain. And over the weekend, Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton was on Meet the Press. You won't believe what she said. We'll talk about it right here on Washington Watch. And I'll be taking your phone calls a little later at 866-372-7234. Jot down that number if it's new to you. By the way, Congress will not be returning to D.C. this week. All right, enough cheering. The reason they're not is because of the snow. In fact, it's been unbelievable. I've been literally snowed in all weekend, hoping to get back to Louisiana sometime. All the flights have been canceled. But anyway, that said, the vote to override the president's veto of the reconciliation measure, that's the one that defunded the 80% of Planned Parenthood and a large portion of Obamacare, that vote will come sometime next week. We'll keep you posted on that. The website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's guest, our topics. Also, if you're not already receiving my daily update and our alerts, you can do so by going to TonyPerkins.com and signing up. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me at T Perkins. All right. On Friday, as the snow was falling, so was the criticism. The National Review, which is one of the oldest and most respected conservative publications, founded by William F. Buckley, issued a special edition entitled Stop Trump. Inside the edition, 22 conservative thinkers, I couldn't resist, folks, weighed in on why Donald Trump is a threat to conservatism. And here to tell us why is the editor of National Review, Rich Lowry. Rich, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Good luck weathering the snow down there.
Yeah, it's been an amazing weekend. Well, this avalanche that fell on Friday, pretty significant, a 65-year-old publication, the National Review. Has it ever done anything like this before?
Not quite. We've weighed in heavily in presidential nomination fights before, but never this way, by mustering so many voices across conservatism. And there are a couple points we wanted to make. One, that the opposition is pretty widespread. We have libertarians in this feature. We have religious conservatives in it. We have old Reagan hands. We have new young upstarts. We really tried to touch every part of the movement. And one of the implicit points that we're making is that it's not necessarily the establishment that opposes Donald Trump. In fact, a lot of elements of the Republican establishment, as we speak, are hiding under their desks, trying to figure out how to co-opt or deal with Donald Trump. But it's principled conservatives who oppose him, because we don't believe, whatever his appeal and virtues might be, that he really is grounded in conservative ideas and principles like limited government, liberty, and the Constitution.
Now, I saw, Rich, throughout these 22 different perspectives, some common themes. One, a recognition that people in the country are fed up with politics as usual. They're concerned about losing the identity of the nation. There's a laundry list of things that bring us to this point of great concern and angst among Americans. But the other common theme is that Donald Trump is not the remedy.
That's right. You know, and what Trump is really promising implicitly is that he will be the strong man who finally makes government more efficient and makes the trains run on time. When the conservative critique of government is that it's much too big, it's jumped its constitutional bounds, and it will never be effective again until it is cut down to size and really focuses on the things it's supposed to do, including obviously securing the borders and enforcing the nation's laws. But Trump has a different approach, and you can actually see now he's beginning, and this dance is beginning between Donald Trump and the establishment, where people like Bob Dole and you know, various lobbyists say, you know what, he's a deal maker. We can get along with him. And Trump the other day said, look, guys, you have to be a little bit establishment, right? That's how you get things done. And I believe if Trump wins the nomination, and there's some obviously a significant chance that he will, the day he locks up the nomination, he'll begin to rebrand himself as just a moderate deal maker and say, look, I was never that conservative. Look at my record. Look, even National Review criticized me. And if he actually becomes president, we'll have no idea what he actually will do. And I would have very little faith on him following through on anything he said to this point.
I want to get to that aspect in a moment of, let's say Donald Trump does have the nomination. I want to talk about that because I think there's a we've seen in the last two cycles exactly where that leads. But first, another theme that I saw woven throughout these essays, these perspectives of these various leaders, was the Constitution, and that the Constitution is the contract by which Americans agree to be governed. And Donald Trump, in his comments, and I want to ask you about this, but the perspective appears to be that Donald Trump, like our current president, would simply see the Constitution as a nuisance to accomplish what he wants to do.
Yeah, at the very least, he sounds a-constitutional. He has very little understanding of the Constitution. He almost never talks about it. And I think at least part of his appeal to, you know, very frustrated Republicans out there is that he would do exactly what Obama has done, but do it to the other side. And I can see, you know, the emotional appeal of that, but if you're a principled conservative constitutionalist, that has to be as appalling to you as what President Obama has done the last several years.
Well, I mean, if you love the country and you understand the unique nature of our republic, I mean, if we trample upon the Constitution, whether it's to accomplish something good for the moment, we're only tearing it down for the future. And I think some of the damage that's been done that allowed President Obama to do what he did has been done in the past by some conservatives. I mean, I think the Constitution is there for a reason, and we need to hold all public officials, whether they're Republican or Democrat, liberal or conservative, to the Constitution.
Absolutely. You know, it's the founding contract, you know, in the Lockean sense, the agreement between the people and the government about what the bounds of the government's power are. And it defends natural God-given rights, and it protects those rights against majorities when they're wrong and against overweening executives. So this is really a foundational thing for our country, and it's very important, I believe, that conservatives and Republicans elect a president this time who understands that, because if there's just someone like Trump who's going to do the same thing Obama did, then it becomes a new norm, a new normal,
right,
that any president can act beyond these legitimate powers. And then we've just switched the nature of our government and something totally different from what the founders intended.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Rich Lowry is my guest. He is the editor of National Review. Okay, I want to go back to this scenario you put out, that you just mentioned here a moment ago. Let's say Donald Trump were to capture the nomination, and then he could go back and say, well, look, I'm not all that good. I'm a moderate. I can make deals. That's not going to help him in a general election, because we've seen in the last two election cycles where the moderate Republicans, the left-leaning Republicans, the rhinos, whatever you want to call them, have a hard time turning the base out and therefore hands the election to the Democrat.
Well, I think it's going to be a huge problem having a fractured party if Trump is the nominee. And people say, well, he can pick up Republicans that he loses by winning over working class Democrats. And certainly Trump could scramble the picture in a lot of interesting ways. But I think there are things about him and about his record that Republicans either have been charmed by or haven't really cared particularly about, that the general electorate is going to have a different attitude toward. And you can see, it's sort of astonishing that Trump has gotten this far without like a major negative ad campaign coming after him. That's a great luxury he's had that he won't have in a general election. And you can just feel the Democrats warming up what will be a campaign to kind of Romney-ize him by focusing on some of his less reputable business and business practices and personal history, and it might be ugly, but unfortunately in 2012 was effective, and there's even more to shoot at with Donald Trump than with Mitt Romney.
Rich Lowry, when Donald Trump sat there talking in making his speeches, and he draws big crowds, does he talk about the policy perspectives that he would hold, or does he talk at a very superficial level? I mean, how well do we know where he's actually going to come down on many of the key issues?
We don't. He speaks very thematically, and that could be very powerful, as we've seen. He has a few key themes about making America great again and winning again and building a border wall and getting tougher on immigration and getting tougher on trade deals. And I think he would fund more fencing at the border, which is certainly welcome. I think he would do whatever he could to retaliate against foreign trade. But besides that, I think every single thing is a jump ball. I don't think he's particularly committed to this tax plan that he has, which is an enormous $12 trillion tax cut on paper, but I don't think he fully understands even his own plan. You've seen his immigration plan, the one that's written on paper. He knows nothing about it and has actually directly contradicted it. So this is a guy who's endlessly flexible. He will dump all this stuff at a moment's notice if it serves his interest. He's someone who, just again, focusing on immigration, someone who is criticizing Mitt Romney, you know, polite, nice, earnest Mitt Romney, for being much too mean, for saying that we should have self-deportation, which is another way of saying you enforce the laws and you let the illegal population attrit as you enforce those laws, and is not the same guy who's turning around saying he's going to deport 11 million people. So there's a major disconnect there, and you know, a lot of our contributors just think he's someone who's playing on conservative emotions and can't be trusted on any of this.
Rich Lowry, what has been the response of National Review's special edition that came out Friday?
Well, it was really like a bomb going off in the media. It was plastered, the cover was plastered all over the place, you know, beginning Thursday night and through the weekend. It's generated an enormous amount of commentary, pro and con, and a lot of support on Twitter and a lot of hateful denunciations on Twitter. I will say we've been extremely heartened by the response of our readers. We've gotten hundreds and hundreds of spontaneous donations and people reaching out saying, this is what National Review exists to do, is to hold up the banner for principled conservatism, even when people don't want to hear it, even when it's controversial, even when it may not be that popular. And that's what Bill Buckley founded the publication to do, and we're trying to stay true to that charge.
Rich, we're up against a break, but I guess one fallout was the fact that the GOP dropped the National Review from an upcoming debate. Rich, still there? Did I lose you?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, I'm still here. Not unexpected. We priced that one in. It was a small price to pay. We wanted to stand up and tell the truth and let the chips fall where they may.
All right. Well, that's principled conservatism. Certainly understand that. Rich Lowry, as always, thanks for joining us. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Tony.
Folks, if you want to find out more, you can go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. All right. When we come back, Eric Erickson joins us to talk about a very similar topic. Donald Trump, he's taking evangelical pastors to task based upon their leaning toward Donald Trump, given his, I'll let him explain when we come back. All right, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this. Fear not. If you've read the Bible, you've read those words. But have you ever paused to meditate upon their meaning? In almost every case where God spoke those words, it preceded something extraordinary being done through ordinary people. God told people like Abraham, Gideon, and the apostles to reject their fears because fear holds us back from experiencing all that God wants to do in us and through us. We can't operate in fear and in faith. Faith says advance, fear says retreat. Do you want to know how to live with no fear? That's the focus of my new book, No Fear: Real Stories of a Courageous New Generation Standing for Truth. You'll be inspired and hopefully challenged by the real-life stories of young people who are standing up for Jesus in an increasingly hostile culture. You'll also read the biblical accounts of those who stood for God in their day and learn how to stand in a way that honors Christ. Learn to live with a holy reverence for God, and you'll have no fear of man. For more information, go to TonyPerkins.com.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber, president, co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope was meant to be a one-time trip to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi, after Hurricane Katrina. And then God got involved. And since then, we have been to 9 different states, rebuilt 1,700 homes, and it's all because we love Jesus. God tells us to love Him and love others. And that's what we do, either through 8 Days of Hope or a new ministry called Hope Reigns. Hope Reigns goes immediately after disaster, a tornado, a flood, a fire, a snowstorm. But what we notice with disasters is right after disaster, there's so many ministry opportunities. We've already been to New York, Illinois, Tennessee, Texas. So if someone's interested in 8 Days of Hope or Hope Reigns, the best place to go is our website, 8daysofhope.com. And even though we might not have an event planned the day you go to the website, if you give us your email address on our website, we'll be able to contact you about future events.
Our country is in trouble. We're in a moral nosedive.
And recovery won't come from a political party. It'll come from returning our focus to God. You can help by being a part of the Decision America Tour.
In 2016, the Decision America Tour will visit all 50 states. At each stop, Franklin Graham will share the life-changing truth of Jesus Christ and challenge Christians to live out biblical principles at home, in public, and at the ballot box.
And I really believe this next election is going to be one of the most critical elections in the history of our country.
Be bold about your faith in Christ. Sign up for your state's prayer team. You can also get friends together to pray for America, our leaders.
And for the Decision America Tour.
If you do, we'll send you a free prayer journal to encourage you in your prayer life. Go to DecisionAmericaTour.com.
The only hope for this country is the Church of Jesus Christ.
DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. All right, we've been talking about Donald Trump. I mean, no question he's been an anomaly throughout this presidential election cycle. One area he claims to be connecting with in the polls would suggest that he is with evangelicals, even pastors. Now, there's no question that Donald Trump has shifted his views on very significant issues over the years, abortion, marriage, special rights for people based upon their sexual behavior. And I'm all for people, by the way, changing their views. Okay, that's why we make these arguments. We want them to come to our side. And I made these arguments about Mitt Romney. I mean, after talking with him, he explained his change of views. And, you know, it was acceptable to me, and that's why I supported him as an individual in the general election. But is that same evidence present with Donald Trump? Does he have a good explanation of the change? And is it good enough to explain why so many pastors seem to be attracted or leaning toward Donald Trump as a candidate for president? Joining now with his analysis is the founder of Resurgent, my good friend Eric Erickson. Eric, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks very much for having me.
Hey, Eric, let's talk about your piece. You just had a piece out that you wrote about basically challenging, it's entitled A Confession, What I Think of Pastors for Trump.
Well, you know, I'm a really strong believer that as an evangelical, I have a worldview based on Christ redeeming me, a day of judgment, a second coming, and that my worldview based on Christ should shape my politics, not my politics shaping my Christian worldview. And I look around at a lot of pastors who are embracing Donald Trump, and I have a real problem with it, primarily because, you know, 1 Corinthians 5, Paul very explicitly says that if there is someone holding himself out to be a Christian, we actually are supposed to exercise judgment. If they are a swindler or sexually immoral or you name it, here we have a candidate running for president who calls himself a Christian and has done so repeatedly on the campaign trail, but also says he has never had to ask God for forgiveness. He has never had a need to repent. He has attempted to throw a widow out of her home in Atlantic City, New Jersey. When she refused, he tried to use eminent domain to get her out unsuccessfully. He's been divorced twice. He's had a public affair while being married. And yet he goes on national television and says to evangelicals, he has never had a need to repent. He's never had to ask God to forgive him. He doesn't have a favorite book of the Bible. He doesn't have a favorite line of scripture. And that should raise really big red flags for pastors across the country if Donald Trump is, if we're taking him at his word that he's a Christian, there are really big problems with his fidelity to scripture and the faith. And yet there are pastors who are running for him because they've, I think to a degree, that they're convinced they've got to save the country, and in effect they've begun to make an idol of the country.
Eric, if that's the case, and pastors are overlooking the obvious out of concern for the country and you know, this call to almost nationalism that he has, this call to make America great again, are there not other candidates that are in this race that have the same conservative bedrock principles that they're talking about, but also have a record to back that up?
There are. And, you know, I haven't endorsed any of the candidates in the race. But, I mean, if I knowing a lot of the candidates personally, I mean, the guy who is as close to Trump as you can be, but actually I do know is a Christian and admits he's a sinner and has a very strong Christian worldview, his dad's a preacher, is Ted Cruz. And then, of course, there's Marco Rubio, who just had this amazing confrontation the other day with an atheist activist and began to share the gospel with him, which you never see presidential candidates on the trail sharing the gospel of Christ with an atheist, explaining to the kid that you should, in fact, want a Christian to be your president because a Christian knows he's accountable to a higher power.
Right.
And that's not language you get from Donald Trump.
Oh, and you also have Mike Huckabee, a former Southern right. Baptist pastor, Rick Santorum, who really kind of led under the conservative banner in the last cycle. So there's many other candidates available there. It is hard to explain this phenomena that surrounds the popularity of Donald Trump, because I don't hear a lot in his comments about where he stands on these critical issues, issues that are of great importance to evangelical and social conservative voters.
Well, I think one of the other big red flags that Christians should have is when Donald Trump tries to explain how he is suddenly pro-life when just 2 years ago he was pro-abortion, is that he met someone who had become a celebrity whose parents had intended to abort him but had not aborted him. And that suggests to me that Donald Trump doesn't really value all lives mattering, that when he becomes pro-life, and God bless him if his conversion to being pro-life is authentic, it troubles me that his conversion is not on the merits of saving the Down syndrome child,
right,
but saving someone who grew up to become famous. And that bothers me.
Eric, we're almost out of time. Hard outs, and we're about to come to a hard out here. But 30 seconds, what's your message to pastors when it pertains to this presidential election cycle?
My message is that they're supposed to be pointing to the direction of an everlasting kingdom, not a temporary power in the on the United States. They should be looking for Christ, not looking for an American Jesus or even a political hero. All politicians are fallible men, and building Donald Trump up the way some of them are is only going to lead to their ruin and their congregation's dissatisfaction.
But you're not suggesting they not be involved.
No, I think we have a God-given right to be involved in American politics, but I think the eye on the prize is eternity, not the next political cycle.
All right, Eric Erickson, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your insight, as always.
Thank you.
Hey, folks, you can actually read that piece. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over and read it for yourself. All right, don't go away. When we come back, I'm going to take a look at some of Hillary Clinton's comments when we come back here on Washington Watch.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, a lot of things happening in the markets this week. The big news that's going to drive the markets is going to be a couple of things. One, it's going to be the Fed. Yes, the Fed. The Fed is speaking. That's all they're doing is speaking. That's happening Wednesday. And they're going to be speaking and people are looking for the tone of the Fed. I can almost guarantee you Janet Yellen's going to be very dovish. She's probably going to try to say as little as possible. She's going to use the word transitory a number of times. Data is in a transitory, you know, or temporary. I mean, that's the word she's going to use in a very dovish kind of tone. Come on, they've been saying transitory now for 7 years. I'm trying to figure out at what point in time is something no longer temporary and pretty much the trend of the markets. But that's what they're going to use, and it is not likely that she's going to say anything that is going to have much of an impact on the markets. But we get durable good numbers out as well. New home sales, pending home sales, they're going to be very interesting numbers. But the real driver, I would suspect, is going to be two things. Oil, again, oil is certainly going to be a driver in the markets. We get inventories again, obviously, on Wednesday, so people will be watching that. But oil is going to be a big driver. The other driver is going to be earnings. And we are getting a lot of earnings reports this week. Everybody's going to be looking at earnings. I don't care much about earnings companies report, but I will be looking at the revenues, far more important than the earnings, and get a good look at that, and we'll see how that shakes up the market. So oil earnings, that's going to be the big news this week.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this chilly Monday afternoon. District of Columbia and Virginia, actually most of the East Coast, still digging out from a record snowstorm over the weekend. Congress taking the relatively unusual steps of canceling their meeting this week. The reason the Democrats had their retreat, the Republicans had theirs a week before last, and so they would be leaving Wednesday afternoon, and reality was they would only have about a half a day to work, and the flights are still all messed up. So anyway, the significance about that is the vote to override the president's veto will come next week. So stay tuned, because we still need you to communicate with your member of Congress about this. A significant vote, and it takes two-thirds to override the president's veto. So we need to have a strong showing, and that was part of this postponement. Okay, over the weekend, you know, they have the weekend shows. Hillary Clinton really struggling against Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders coming on strong. Hillary Clinton was on Meet the Press, and when she was asked, you know, about how the campaign was going, and that she was being challenged despite all the fact that she had all these endorsements of senators and governors, that Bernie Sanders was running such a good campaign against her. And here's a clip of what she said. And so I want you to listen to this.
I feel good about where we are. Obviously, we'll find out a week from tomorrow. But if you look at the differences between Senator Sanders and myself, I just don't think we can wait. We can't wait to make progress on the myriad of issues that I think we're going to be facing in the next administration. I want to build on the progress that President Obama has made.
Did I hear her right? She wants to build on the progress that President Obama has made. All right, help me out, folks. What progress has President Obama made that has moved the nation forward? Now, no, I get it. I mean, he certainly made progress for certain elements of society. Special interest groups, he has advanced their radical agendas. But, all right, let's see. Let's talk about the economy. Has the president moved the economy forward? I don't think so. Actually, we've seen real wages have been stagnant. Real unemployment continues at a almost historic high. You say, oh, well, it's down. It's down low. Well, it's because so many people have dropped out of the workforce. People have quit looking for jobs or they're in position, they're in underemployed. Well, let's see. The could it be that he's moved us forward, the progress of reducing the nation's debt? No, wouldn't be that either. We're over $18 trillion. Okay. Well, he's made us secure from terrorism. No, wouldn't be that either. Well, he strengthened the military. No, wouldn't be that either. The military is having a hard time retaining and recruiting good people because he's turned it into a laboratory of social experimentation. Well, he's secured our rights, our First Amendment freedoms. No, wouldn't be that either. We've seen a historic attack on religious freedom in this country under the Obama administration. Well, you would say he's given us health care. No, he has just about destroyed America's health care system by Obamacare, which is very close to imploding. I mean, you've got United Health and others pulling out of these exchanges because they just can't sustain themselves. The costs are too high. So then what has the president done? What is the progress that this one Hillary Clinton speaks of? Well, it's the only thing I can think of is the progress of the left to fundamentally change and remake America in their own image. I mean, even you see Hillary Clinton now, who has even changed her rhetoric on abortion. You know, it used to be that it needs to be safe, legal, and rare. Well, the rare part has disappeared. In fact, recently she said that it needs to be funded by taxpayers. She wants to ensure that taxpayers continue to fund abortion. She's been in Planned Parenthood made a unique, I don't know if it's unprecedented, they may have done it before, but it's certainly not common. In the primary, they've already endorsed Hillary Clinton for president. Of course, they have a lot at stake in this because $550+ million. They know that if a Republican is elected, it's a part of this reconciliation bill. They know that if a Republican is elected to the White House next year, they could be cut off from the gravy train. This forced partnership between taxpayers and Planned Parenthood could go away. So yeah, they've got a lot at stake in this. Progress? Not sure I see it. All right, folks, when we come back, we're going to be going to the phone lines. So don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this.
The American Marines raising the flag on the island of Iwo Jima. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. That is the Iwo Jima Memorial. We will visit it in Washington, D.C. on our spiritual heritage tour. It's to honor the Marines that have gone before us to defend our country's freedom over the centuries. We're going to see the Iwo Jima Memorial, the Arlington National Cemetery, and much, much more on our tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon in June and September. In addition, we'll have a trip to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. So much of American history on display there. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will lead the way for our tour as I host it. So if you want more information, go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com and join us in June or September.
What do faith and good planning have in common? They can both have consequences beyond our earthly life. By faith, we can have the blessed assurance of life after death. And by careful planning, we can extend financial support of the American Family Association even after we've gone on to be with the Lord. One way to make that happen is a bequest of life insurance, and it's easier than you think. In fact, it's as easy as naming AFA as beneficiary of all or a portion of your policy on your beneficiary designation form. Doing that would mean your life insurance proceeds will help further the work of the American Family Association, and that your estate will benefit from an estate tax charitable deduction for the value of the proceeds paid. To learn more about making a bequest of life insurance or a whole range of other financial planning and giving options, contact the AFA Foundation. Reach us through Facebook, at our website, afafoundation.net, or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. As Christians, we're called to mark the difference between the holy and the profane. We should strive to think and vote biblically. As we head into the primary season, we have a duty to vote and to vote wisely. We should be able to know the difference between a liar, schmoozer, deceiver, and a candidate who is truly committed to godly principles. Yet, will we allow ourselves to be fooled by individuals who claim they're Christians but who do not exhibit a walk with Christ? Noted pastor of old, C.H. Spurgeon, stated, "In judgment, in action, in hearing, in teaching, in association, we must discern between the precious and the vile, and maintain the great distinction which the Lord made upon the world's first day. O Lord Jesus, be thou our light throughout the whole of this day, for thy light is the light of men." This is a Decency Minute. Find us at americandecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, broadcasting from Washington, D.C., snowed in here. Snow's finally starting to melt. It's starting to get the streets cleaned off, but it's still a mess here in the city. It was very peaceful over the weekend, extremely peaceful. It was. I went down on the mall and wasn't very many people, just a few of us, braving the blizzard, but it was so peaceful to walk there and see the Capitol blanketed in snow. Okay, 866-372-7234. Can you help me here? Can you help me identify this progress that Hillary Clinton speaks of that the Obama administration has made? I mean, I just can't. I'm hard-pressed to find anything here that could be described as progress. 866-372-7234, number to call to help me out here this afternoon. Just by way of information, 287 days until the next election, all right? 287 days, and we'll have an opportunity to select a new leader. All the more reason that you need to be listening to this program, because I'm over the next 287 days, we're going to be talking about the candidates and where they stand on the issues. We'll be talking maybe again, to some of the candidates. It gets a little harder and more dicey as we get closer to the election because of legal reasons. And we'll have some publications out. I've got something coming out soon that'll give you kind of a guide on where the candidates stand on the core issues. You need to be registered. Don't wait. Many of the primaries are coming up very, very soon. A week from tonight, Iowa has their caucuses, followed by New Hampshire with their primary, and then South Carolina. Then we roll right into Super Tuesday and all the events in the South. So make sure you are registered to vote. Oftentimes, you got to have 30 days in advance. So it's coming up very, very quick. So register, inform yourselves, and vote. Be involved. and encourage others in your church and your family and your community to be involved as well. All right, 866-372-7234, and we are going to go where I think it's warmer. We're going to go to Texas where Carol is on the line. Carol, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, hello. How are you?
I'm well. Is it warmer there in Texas?
It is 64 degrees right now.
All right. Is the sun shining?
The sun is just absolutely gorgeously shining.
All right. Well, good to hear.
Yes, it is. You want to know what kind of progress President Obama has made?
Yeah, I'm struggling to find it. Can you help me?
I immediately thought of regression. If he's trying to progress us to a state like Nazi Germany, I think he's well on the way. But as far as progress when it comes to economics, when it comes to, like you said, health care, when it comes to social policy, when it comes to religious freedom, First Amendment rights, strong military, keeping our borders safe, keeping us safe from terrorists, I kind of think he fails on all of them.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point, Carol. Maybe I need to go back and listen to that clip more closely. Maybe she said she wants to build on the regression of the Obama administration. So maybe that's what it was. Maybe I missed it. So, Carol, thanks for listening. Appreciate you calling in and helping us out today. 866-372-7234, and we're going to go home to Louisiana where Ricky is on the line. Ricky, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Tony. I want to make two comments, one about the past and one about the progression. Obama's definitely progressed towards socialistic ideals like communist China, North Korea, Cuba, Russia. He's definitely brought us 100% closer to socialist communist ideals, so he's definitely progressed us in that area. But what I say to people that like that type of progression, they should move to China, North Korea, or Cuba if they like that kind of progressive socialism, because that's what those countries believe in and live by, even though they all failed. And the thing I want to mention about, you talked earlier about pastors getting behind Trump, really brought to mind the Pied Piper of Hamlet, all the pastors that want to back up Trump. And I don't say this lightly because I don't want to be in danger of hellfire, but I do have, I got a just cause in saying this. All those pastors, including Robert Jeffries, who I've lost all respect for, I never believe anything that man ever says again, they're a bunch of deceived fools. Because to back up a heathen over a Christian, and I've been hearing for years, the Christian vote would just get out and vote, would win every election. Well, we finally got a presidential candidate that can win, Cruz, and half the deceived Christians, including the pastors, are going with a heathen, Donald Trump. Go figure that they want him without excuse now. That we got the man that will bring all the Christians out to vote, which is Ted Cruz, and I'll let you comment.
All right, Ricky, I appreciate your passion. Now, let me just say, I know Robert Jeffress. He's a friend of mine, and I don't think he has supported. He's not officially supporting Donald Trump. I think he spent some time with him, and I don't know the extent of his support or what he has said. I do know that there is a role for pastors to play when it comes to communicating with these candidates. Now, I said this last week, said it on this program, I've said it on Fox, on CNN. I speak with all the candidates. Hillary Clinton calls me, and I'm not holding my breath, but if she were to call and ask me what I thought about something, I would tell her. I've done that with Donald Trump. I've done that actually with every presidential candidate with the exception of John Kasich and Chris Christie, whom I've not talked to, met with, heard from. But my role here in part up until the point that I make an endorsement is to try to persuade all of them to be more understanding of the issues that we care about. Now, that's far different than an endorsement. And I agree, when you look at, as a Christian, and this is a good point. This is one of those, what we call at home, a teaching moment. As Christians, and that's predominantly you know, our audience across the country, predominantly Christians, conservatives, but we're on mostly Christian stations, all right? And look, I don't, if you listen to me, you know I don't make any apologies for the fact that I'm a Christian. My orientation as I approach public policy and politics and the culture is from a Christian perspective. That's our worldview. And we don't need to apologize for that. So when we come to this point, we look at the candidates that are available to us. I do think that we have to process it from a standpoint of, all right, who number one is, we look at their qualifications, who's qualified, who has solid ideas that fall within the Constitution. Now, we should also be considering who among them are Christians. Yes, I think we should look for Christian candidates. Now, that's not the only characteristic, because I don't want an unqualified Christian to lead the country. Just because someone is a Christian does not mean they're going to be a good leader. But in this case, in this election, we have Christians, multiple Christians running for office who are qualified. And so I think that we... In fact, this is very interesting because there was a poll. It's not a new poll; it's a couple years old. That, and I think, and I'm reaching here back in the file cabinet of my memory to pull this out. But I think it's somewhere around 60%. I could be wrong. I'll look it up, bring it back later. But it was around 60% of Americans say they want a president who recognizes God and prays to God. And I think this is my theory behind that, is that there's comfort in knowing that you have a leader who knows that there's somebody watching when you're not. And that's an important point, someone who recognizes they're fallible and that they, too, are accountable. And that would include asking for forgiveness and seeking direction from. I don't think certainly certain Christians, but I think most voters don't want somebody who knows everything but knows where to go to find the answers, and that would include praying. I know there's some atheists out there and some anti-Christian folks on the left who listen to this program and blog and that sort of thing that would disagree with that, but the majority of Americans would agree with that statement, and the polling backs it up. All right, I'm going to work in a couple more phone calls here. Good call, Ricky. Thanks for calling in. All right, let's go to Ohio where Dwight is on the line. Dwight, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thank you, Tony, for answering my call, taking my call. I'm calling about your question about what Hillary Clinton said about progressing with continuing Obama's progress.
Right.
If you look at it, she's a student of Saul Alinsky. Saul Alinsky wrote his book. It's dedicated to Satan, Lucifer. If you look at it from her side, they're making progress because they're destroying our country. So I think if you look at it from her side, that's what she's talking about. The Christian side of it, our laws were all bound. Built on or made on God's laws, which are laws that lead to life, not death. So I think we need to be very careful who we vote for, that the person has not only called themselves a Christian, but live it out and know what God's laws are all about and who God really is. He's the author of life, and Jesus said, I came to give you life and life more abundantly. So that would help right there. Should help people decide. And then Proverbs 29:2 says, "When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when the wicked man rules, the people groan and sigh." And he told Moses, God told Moses how to choose people. Actually, it was Moses' father-in-law that
Jethro
spoke it out. Jethro, you know, to choose. Choose men of integrity and honesty. So
right.
That's just my thoughts.
Well, and I think they're good thoughts. Dwight, I think they're very good thoughts. I think when we look at the characteristics that Paul lays out in Timothy to in terms of the leadership we look for, I think those characteristics are the same. I know he's speaking of church leadership, but leadership is leadership. I do think that we need to look for people of integrity, people who are honest, people who have their homes in order. I mean, that's the first place you learn to actually govern. And if you can't run your own house, how are you going to run a country? I think those are all valid elements to look at. It's good criteria. Dwight, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your insight and input. Let's go back to Texas, try to work another call here with John. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you. I have a kind of a tongue-in-cheek comment. He's managed to accomplish something that no other president or no other nation has done in the history of the United States, and that is allow an invasion of people who are incompatible, their religion is incompatible with the Constitution. And it has created an atmosphere of fear. And we know fear is from Satan. There's racial tension that's been propagated by poor leadership. And that is an essence of what he has accomplished in the last 8 years.
Yeah, and if we're talking about progressing us toward a government, a centralized government with power, socialism, Marxism. Yeah, I guess she is right. He has progressed the nation in that sense. John, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And let me just say this. John brings up a point about, you know, the immigration, and there's no doubt we've seen a rapid expansion of those coming from Middle Eastern countries with Islamic faith, many of whom, and I've talked about this before in the program, the polling has shown this, that they do not like the Constitution. They would prefer Sharia law. A large percentage, okay? I'll leave it at that. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's alarming. Fear. We don't need to be fearful. We need to be prayerful, and we need to be involved. I was looking just over the weekend, the numbers of people who actually participate in elections. If more Bible-believing Christians would register, inform themselves, and vote, we can change the direction of the country. By the way, before we're out of time here, I did want to mention earlier caller brought up Saul Alinsky in his book, Rules for Radical, and he talked about how it was dedicated to Satan. That's true. I've read the book, and it is the operating manual for the left. I mean, it is in full operational mode today. And if you never read it, you should read it. It's insightful, and you'll say, wow, that's exactly what they do. That's exactly what the left does. That's what this interest group or that interest, that's how they operate. It's very insightful. The president was a student of Saul Alinsky as well as Hillary Clinton. The left, it's their playbook. And it goes way, way back. All right, folks, out of time for today. Thanks so much for tuning in. Frank, sorry not going to get to your call, and others holding on there. But, Lord willing, there's tomorrow. Hope you'll be back. We plan on it. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.